Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by UNC Family Medicine. Your Health, providing practical health-related news and information for our community, as Dr. Page and Goldstein specialize in patient care at UNC Family Medicine. And now, Your Health.
Welcome to UNC Family Medicine's Your Health, supported by UNC Healthcare. I'm Dr. Christy Page.
And I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein.
Adam, on our show today, we have the great fortune of talking with Sivan Yaari, founder and president of Innovation Africa, about health and healing one village at a time. Remarkable
Christy,
work.
This will be really interesting. You've come back from Africa not too long ago, and I know you have some experiences, and our guest is doing amazing work.
Mm-hmm. Well, first, we have some research that matters. We're going to talk about bullying, about medicines for alcoholism.
About how people deal with trampolines and all of the injuries and accidents.
And about early depression and anger in teenage years, perhaps tainting love and life and couples' relationships even 20 years later.
First, Christy, we're going to talk about bullying, the really bad things that happen to too many people at too many ages across cultures, and what might happen physically, not just psychologically, for those that are bullied.
Well, we've talked, Adam, about kids who are bullying have more social problems, mental health issues, and even physical problems that are related to even once they've grown up years later. We know that they tend to be sick more often than their peers with stomach aches and sleep problems and headaches, which made sense to me as, you know, you don't want to go to school or you feel bad because you're worried about how mean and the kinds of things that other children might do to you. But this is a link that could explain it further.
This research was done over at our sister city, Duke University School of Medicine, by Dr. Copeland, who was a guest on our show a year or so ago. And they actually followed 1,400 youth from ages 9 to 21 and interviewing the youth and the mothers about the bullying. And then they took blood samples from the youth every year or two and looked at these inflammation, these blood tests that might show there was stuff happening in the kids' blood biologically.
And what they found were that these levels of C-reactive protein, which is the blood marker often used as a sort of a gauge of inflammation levels in the body, those levels were higher in kids who were bullied compared with other kids who were not.
And these kids with the highest level were the ones who had had it repeatedly over a long period of time. So this really suggests that bullying really does have some adverse physical effects that could persist into adulthood, and the intervening needs to start as soon as possible. So if you know of someone that's getting bullied, really stand up, get your doctor to help you, get your school teacher, get anyone that you can. Let's get it stopped. Let's make a difference.
Talk openly with your children. Okay, let's talk about talking openly with your doctor and with your family about alcoholism.
Yeah, this next research that matters, Christy, is a review really of over 22,000 patients in a variety of studies who had abused alcohol and looked to see to what extent are existing medications that can be effective in helping people cut down on alcohol, are they used? What do you think? I would have said, oh, they're probably used 25% of the time.
I probably would have said maybe less than that, maybe only for people in inpatient facilities who do that. And most people can't afford those inpatient facilities. But we usually tell people to go to an AA meeting or get a sponsor or get help through counseling, or maybe some people do these 30-day stints in rehab centers.
These behavioral approaches. Mm-hmm. But the question is, are the pharmacologic approaches that have been proven to be effective, are they being utilized very often? And the answer is no, they're not.
No.
Less than 10% of the time when they're eligible.
I know. There are multiple medications, and when you look at one of those big review studies that look at all the different research, there were 120 research studies finding that prescription medication helps addicts reduce their drinking and the associated harms of drinking. So there are multiple medicines that can work, and yet not very many people are getting them.
And this research was in the Journal of the American Medical Association, and we want to give a call out to one of our colleagues at the Shepp Center for Health Services Research, Dr. Dan Jonas, who is one of the study's lead authors and a primary care physician. We think this is important. We think if you know anyone, you should be asking, should one of these medicines be part of the treatment approach?
Absolutely. Let's talk about depression and anger in the teenage years and a relationship to what goes on in their life later on.
This research was published in the Journal of Family Psychology, and it followed 340 people for 25 years and looked at the types of emotions they experienced much younger in life and then how that impacted their relationships later in life.
This was research done at the University of Alberta, and as they followed 178 women and 163 men through their transition to adulthood from those ages of 18 to 25, and again at age 32, and again later on in their 40s, they found that some anger and depression and troubles that they had as teenagers impacted how they had their relationships and how they handled those kinds of struggles in their marriages and other relationships later on in life.
I think this is such a formative time period, and I think we all, even I as a parent, we can underestimate easily and think, oh, this is just a normal experience of growing up in teens. But, mm-hmm. you know, traumatic events, breaking up with a relationship, having a relationship have real problems, either violence or substance or cheating, these types of things would affect what happens later. So I think intervening, processing, trying to let them know that this can impact later and helping prepare them so that it doesn't.
Yeah, getting counseling and working through those issues as a young person,
It helps when you're older. It probably helps when you're younger.
Probably does. Let's talk about trampolines. Did you have one growing up, Adam?
You know, I didn't. I kind of always wanted one.
Me too.
But I'm glad I didn't get one now, particularly being a parent. And I think we talked about this a few years ago, but this just brings it home. This was research in the Journal of Pediatric Orthopedics talking about from 2002 to 2011 that almost 300,000 visits to the emergency room occurred because of backyard trampoline injuries.
And although the rates of those injuries have gone up and then back down just a little bit, there's a lot of concern in the pediatric world and certainly in the emergency medicine world about the dangers and the risks of having a trampoline. I have to say, I always wanted one as a kid, and I thought about getting one for our children. And my husband, the emergency medicine doctor, said, absolutely not. No way. We can't even talk about it. I see so many injuries all the time.
Well, you know, those who make the trampolines talk about how sometimes these are the safest thing that kids can do compared to other high-energy activities. And I thought, well, you know, they could be jumping rope. I guess you might say bicycles. But some of the rules that they talked about, and one particular proponent, they said no more than four kids at a time on the trampoline. Mm-hmm. The parent must be home. Don't bounce against the safety net, and no one is to go airborne. I'm thinking, right? How often do one of those four happen?
How do you jump and not go airborne?
I can't really imagine that. I guess you jump and then fall. I don't know, but we certainly worry about this. We think a lot of our patients and listeners probably do have them, and we encourage you to really take it seriously, to really try to get the most safest practices, because this can be very dangerous.
Sure. Well, we've had a chance to talk a little bit about trampolines and be safe and make smart decisions about
worrying about relationships in teens and working them out so that they don't, when they go bad, affect your relationships as you get older.
About only 10% of alcoholics get medications to treat addiction.
And knowing that bowling affects the C-reactive protein, and we want to really prevent that happening as you get older.
Well, that concludes the Research That Matters portion of our show. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be talking with Sivan Yaari, founder and president of Innovation Africa, about healing and health one village at a time. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page.
UNC Family Medicine's number 2 ranked national program is rapidly transforming healthcare through excellence in teaching, clinical care, and research. To participate in UNC Family Medicine's efforts to move innovative ideas into action, call 919-843-5112 or email yourhealth@unc.edu.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, a presentation of UNC Family Medicine. Now, more of Your Health.
Welcome back to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. Today on Conversations, Christy, we've got a really interesting guest and an amazing topic. We're talking with Sivan Yaari, founder and president of Innovation Africa, about health and healing one village at a time.
Welcome, Sivan.
Oh, thank you, Christy. Thank you, Adam.
We're so glad to have you with us and to share your work and your passion. Tell us a little bit for our listeners about your background, what led you in your involvement with the United Nations Development Program, and how that sparked your work.
Oh, well, it started about 15 years ago when I first visited Africa. I worked for a company by the name of DoorDash. It was a summer job, and my job was to go and look for the quality of the jeans that were manufactured in Africa. And that was really the first time when I was exposed to poverty. I was then 20 years old, and I've seen the same challenges in all of the African countries I had to go to, people looking for water, for wood, and that intrigued me. And then I went to get my master's at Columbia, and I learned about energy and energy development. And that's how I decided to go back to the African villages and try to use energy to help them. So now it's been 6 years, and we've been helping with solar energy in these villages.
And Sivan, tell us how Israel comes to play in this, and why this connection between Israel and Africa via Colombia.
So I was born in Israel, and then I find out that probably the best source of energy that we can find will be solar energy. And I remembered that when I was a child, I've seen solar panels on top of Israeli buildings all over. And it's true that Israel has been using solar energy for many, many years since its existence. And therefore, I came to Israel, learned about the Israeli technologies, find out that actually Israel has been using it for many years, and it's very efficient and affordable. And that's how we started importing Israeli technologies, innovations to the African villages. Besides solar energy, I've also brought drip irrigation, also something that was invented in Israel and much needed in the African villages.
So I'd love to hear your reflection. I was in Zimbabwe and Kenya and some other nations when I was 21, and then just recently went back many, 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 many years later to Nairobi, and I was struck by the impression that not much, it didn't change as much as I would think it might in almost 20 years. But yet you're, you know, really involved in this and involved in forwarding technology and solar energy. What is your reflection on how far nations have come, developing nations in Africa, and how you identify which ones need the most help?
This is a challenge, and my opinion, Christy, is that the challenges are so great that it's very difficult for the African countries to actually take care of all of the issues and challenges that each country in Africa faces, and most of them are facing the same issues. The lack of infrastructure that exists in Africa, it's probably why there is not enough development. And I believe that without access to energy, you cannot have much of development, especially when you're talking about economic development or human development. And let me quickly just give you a very simple reality, simple challenge that I'm seeing in most of the African countries where I'm working. The lack of water. People are spending between 3 to 4 hours a day looking for water. Some of them are thirsty, some of them cannot even make it, and some of them are losing their life from thirst. And it's still happening today. It's difficult to imagine. Now, I know, you know, that right beneath their feet, there is a lot of water. You can find a lot of water in Africa, in the aquifers. What you need and what they don't have is the energy that is needed to pump the water to the surface. So you're seeing people digging by hand, looking for water, walking miles and miles, and trying to find something to drink, but yet they cannot access the water that is right below them. You can do it with solar energy. It's cheap, it's easy, and you can really make a great impact. So we strongly believe in Innovation Africa that the reason why they're not able to have as much development is because the lack of energy that they are needing. And the water is just an example.
We're talking with Sivan Yaari, founder and president of Innovation Africa, about health and healing one village at a time. And Sivan, I know that this belief in sustainable and cost-efficient, cost-effective energy extends beyond water. Talk about electricity and talk about refrigeration, because those kinds of issues relate to health, and that's where a light bulb went off in my own head.
Yes, Adam. So what I find out by visiting villages, and I should mention that we are only working in very remote villages. Right now we're operating in 6 countries in Africa. And what we have seen is that once you leave the capital, there is no electricity. No one has access to energy. So when you're going to schools, orphanages, or medical clinic, they don't have access to light. And because they don't have access to electricity, they don't have access then to vaccines and medicine, because, as we know, they need to be stored. And although the government has a lot of vaccines and medicines, by the time it gets to the village, it gets spoiled. So we understood in Innovation Africa that we can solve that situation quite easily. When we are installing 2 to 3 solar panels, 12 to 18 light bulbs, and a small refrigeration, then we are working also with the local government, making sure that the people in the village, and usually we are talking about between 20,000 to 30,000 people, can now have access to vaccines, medicines, the most basic medicines that they need in order to continue and be healthier.
And so you're able to work with the governments in these countries to set up these stations where you have solar panels and are able to have refrigeration there for medicines, or how does it work?
So in order to access the villages, first we're working with the ambassador of the United Nations, then with the ministers in each country, then we're asking them, where do you need most help? Then we are going a bit deeper, working with the local government, and then with the chief of the villages, and then we are going into the staff of the medical clinic, and then figuring out where they need help. And once we find out that we have, that's the district where we would like to work, we are bringing the technology. We're also bringing the engineers, and we are training people in the country so that they can continue use the technology and continue to do more and more. As of today, we have powered 78 villages. Most of them are medical clinics.
So how does this business model work? Is this a business? And then how do the communities sustain what it is that you do? Because I know, like, for instance, when I was volunteering in Haiti, there was a whole rush of aid that came into the country, but then all of a sudden it all kind of pulled back and they couldn't sustain it.
It's an excellent question, Adam. One of the challenges when I started was we are installing solar panels, batteries, light bulbs. My concern was who is going to pay to replace the light bulb and who is going to pay to replace the batteries? We are a charity. We're coming, donating the technology. And now who is going to maintain it? So we find 2 solutions. The first, we understood that now that they have energy, they need to find a way to generate income. I was walking in the villages and I saw people having cell phones. People have cell phones because they get it for free. But what they don't have is a place to charge their phone. And then I said, great, let's create some businesses. Now that we have energy at the medical clinic or the school, we are the only place that has energy in the entire district. People need to charge the phone. So now they are coming, they're charging the phone, paying for it, and that money is collected, deposited in a bank account, and used to change the light bulb and replace the battery. The good news, Adam and Christy, is that the businesses are quite successful and they are able to make more money than they need for the replacement cost so that they can use the money for the medical clinic, the school, the orphans, and so on.
That's so, great. Adam, that is great. That is very, very exciting. You know, we're going to need to take a short break, but when we return, we're going to continue talking with our guest, Sivanya Ari, founder and president of Innovation Africa, about health and healing one village at a time. And let's hear about some of the work that you're doing with some of the health clinics. We're going to be right back, but we'll take a short break. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page.
Your Health is supported by UNC Health Sciences Library and NC Health Info, working together to connect people everywhere with knowledge to improve health. Visit nchealthinfo.org for answers you can trust.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by UNC Family Medicine. Now, more of Your Health.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. We've been talking with Sivanya Ari, founder and president of Innovation Africa, about health and healing one village at a time. And before the break, Sivan, you were telling us about ways to sustain and replace technology through creative business development. And I understand you're also able to do some ability, or you have the ability to manage remotely or monitor from Israel or from outside of the country, what's going on and what's working. Explain how that works for us.
That's correct, Christy. We are very lucky that we find a way to be able to monitor remotely the solar system that we're installing at the remote villages. We have a technology that we are installing in each one of the villages that is sending information to a server that we can access to and find out that everything is operating. So we are able to find out how much energy was produced, how much was consumed. If something breaks, meaning that there is no production of energy for 48 hours, we get an alert. I'm getting the alert, the donor gets the alert, and also our local managers and local contractors on the ground in Africa, so we can go and fix it.
And so even though they're so remote, that seems like you've set up this technology in the middle of rural Africa, and yet you can get a strong enough signal back to another country to know that it's not working?
You know, Chris, it's incredible, but right now what we are using in order to get the information are SMS. So all of the information is sent to the server through SMSs that we are paying for on a daily basis, and that's how we are getting all the information that we need and the alerts.
Well, we're impressed. We have a hard enough time figuring out what's happening in our own homes, much less happening in rural African communities. I wonder, Sivan, I know you're in a number of communities, and it sounds like it's grown since I was able to meet you in a number of months ago, because I knew that you were in Ethiopia and Uganda and Tanzania and Malawi. Tell us about your growth, and particularly also tell us about the role that health clinics play, because I see and understand that there are a lot of health clinics set up in these communities. Is that just a natural outgrowth when people clearly have access to basic needs, that the health is one of the more important ones?
Yes. And to answer your first question about our expansion, we have completed a project in South Africa, and we are now expanding to Congo, the DRC. Congo really being the poorest country in Africa, in the world, to be honest. And I just came back from Congo, and unfortunately the images that I've seen it really encouraged me to go back. So I'm going back in July, where we will be installing and pumping water to very much needed a dry area. When it comes to medical clinics, the impact is tremendous, and we are good in keeping a report of how many more people are coming to the medical clinic after the installation of solar energy. And the numbers are much, much higher. My opinion is the following. First, now they can have access to vaccines and medicines because we're installing refrigeration. Second, now they can come and give birth, and they can do it also during the night because finally they can see. And now they have access to energy so that they can stay there and deliver in the medical clinic. But the third and the most important is that usually after the installation of the solar energy, a doctor accepts to move from the capital to the villages. Doctors who are educated usually don't feel comfortable in living in the villages where he doesn't have access to energy and vaccines and medicines. But after the solar energy, usually we are convincing them with the help of the government to move, and we are also installing solar energy in the homes of the nurses and the future doctors. So once you bring a doctor to the village, then you have a lot more people who are feeling comfortable in coming and getting the support, and in doing so, are healthier.
It's a beautiful way to improve access to health care for all of these communities. How do the communities respond to Innovation Africa? It sounds like you've done a lot of work building trust and building relationships with people in the communities. But have you had any challenges with people mistrusting your efforts?
And let me just add to that question, as an Israeli and an Israeli company that's bringing the technology in, has that created new opportunities or new challenges too?
When it comes to the villagers, they are, when they see us, they see hope. And the district where we are going, usually we are the first white people that they are seeing. And then we are there, and when we are saying that we are also coming from Israel, most of them have never heard of Israel before. And if they did, usually it's from the Bible. So the way that they welcome us is very positive. They are usually very happy, very hopeful of us coming and helping in any way that we can do. Many people have asked me, are people are stealing the solar panels? Are they destroying the system? And I would like to say that no, and it hasn't happened to us. And the reason why they don't do it is because they very much need it. They're very happy. They are very of what we have done for them, and they understand the luck, how lucky they are to now have access to electricity in the school so that they can study, electricity in orphanages, electricity in the medical clinic, and most importantly, access to water. Now that they have access to water, they can grow food, they can sell the food in the market, they can generate income, and they can be self-sustained. So most of the time, I must say that they are very welcoming and they are appreciative. And also, we make them understand that they own the technology and they have to take care of it by using the business to generate the income that they need in order to maintain and to replace all of the equipment.
You have certainly accomplished so much in a short period of time. As you look ahead with Innovation Africa in the next decade or two, what are your hopes and dreams for what you will accomplish?
You know, Christy, people are telling us we've done a lot. It's true. We have helped 650,000 people. That's a conservative number in 78 villages in 6 years. It's good, but it's not enough. It's only a drop in the ocean. The demands are so great. People are waiting. I have a list of villages that are waiting for us to go back. Yet it's easy, it's simple, it's quick, and it doesn't cost much money. And I just hope that we can have more organizations like Innovation Africa to go and help. because I can't see any other solution right now than solar energy, pumping water, and giving electricity. And hopefully people can join us or more organizations can do it. There are just too many people waiting and suffering at this point.
Well, it may be a drop in the ocean, but it's a drop of hope. And boy, it's inspiring, and we're inspired. And I'm sure lots of our listeners are as well. You have some great stories on your website about how teenagers and others can do projects and get involved, people who may want to volunteer, people who may want to donate. Help our listeners know where to go to.
Yes. So they can go to our website, which is probably the best way to reach us, which is www.innoafrica.org, INNOafrica.org. I should also mention, Adam and Christy, that we're very lucky to have the support of many young people. The average age of our donor is 32 years old. So we are very lucky to have the 20s and the 30s, and people are donating to us from $10 to a little bit more. And we are just using the money and going back to the villages and doing the work. 100% of the money is going to Africa because our salaries are paid by foundations. So we are very lucky that we can really use the money to make the impact.
Well, Christy and I are going to actually raise that age just a little bit here. Christy, a lot younger than myself. But we can't thank you enough. We know it's late at night there in Israel. We thank you for being with us and sharing your stories and your inspiration with your health listeners.
Thank you, Adam, and thank you, Christy. Much appreciated.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking with Sivan Ya'ari, founder and president of Innovation Africa, about health and healing one village at a time. Coming up on House Calls, we'll be answering questions about your health. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. Stay with us.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, sponsored by UNC Family Medicine. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Your Health. For the House Call segment of our show today, Adam and I will spend a few minutes talking about your health questions and your concerns.
And you can send any question or any comment to us at yourhealth@unc.edu, and we'll talk about it on an upcoming show. And we'd like to ask our executive producer, Erica Lloyd, to read us our very first House Call today about LDL cholesterol.
I'm 71 years old, and I'm in overall pretty good health. I have an LDL cholesterol of 130. I hear on television all the time reasons why I should take cholesterol-lowering medications. What do you think?
Well, I think that it's a wonderful question, and it's a timely question because we do have some new guidelines that have come out about cholesterol-lowering medicines. But I also think that it also speaks to the commercials and to how much marketing is going on that is confusing to a lot of our listeners and to us, frankly.
So there are two things, and I think we'll start the dialogue. We won't finish it today. Matter of fact, Christy, we should do a whole show on here. We have Dr. Sid Smith, who's a national expert, who's a cardiologist at the University of North Carolina. We should try to get him on the show to
yes.
talk about this because they have changed the guidelines. But there's what's called primary prevention, people who don't have any real risk factors for heart disease who might benefit from this to help lower their risk of dying. And then secondary prevention, people who really have a lot of risk factors or maybe already had a heart attack or a stroke. And both of those have different criteria for treatment because you have to weigh the benefits versus the risk.
And when you're talking about the LDL cholesterol, that's the part of the cholesterol that we consider the bad cholesterol. And for years, we've been counting these numbers and using all these cutoffs, but the changes do go based on your risk of having a heart attack or a stroke or a problem related to that cholesterol over time.
And we want to sometimes look at the 10-year risk level. So we might bring out a calculator and calculate that, which we couldn't do because we don't know all the other risk factors. So talk with your doctor, calculate what your 10-year risk is, and then get some recommendations. This isn't a straightforward or easy answer, but it's the right question.
We'll do a show on this, but we'll also ask our brilliant health sciences librarians to post the link about these new guidelines and perhaps a link about where you can calculate your risk.
Erica, what's our very next house call about the prostate?
I went to my doctor a few weeks ago, and he said my prostate looked a little enlarged. My only symptom is getting up once in the night to pee. I do enjoy drinking coffee and water, and other than smoking, I'm in great health. Should I be worried? I should also mention that my father died of prostate cancer.
Now, we're really sorry to hear about your father, and hopefully the doctor actually did a prostate exam and didn't just say, it looks like it's a little bit enlarged here. I've not gotten good enough yet just to do it by looking.
And the smoking thing you mentioned also, we should say, would be a great thing to do to lower your risk of cancer. And but in terms of the large prostate or having what's called BPH, benign prostatic hypertrophy, is a fancy word for a large prostate. That is very common and doesn't necessarily mean that you have prostate cancer. It's important to separate those two things out.
And just two other things, because smoking actually may contribute to prostate cancer. I mean, after all, it contributes to almost every other cancer in the body. So if you, one of the few things you could lower your risk, it wouldn't hurt. And second off, that coffee you're drinking and that water you're drinking probably are making your BPH worse. So it may be benign to us. That's what we call it. But I know it's not benign to you if you're getting up every night to pee. So I would encourage you to get rid of the coffee, cut down on that water, particularly after 6 p.m., and cut out the cigs.
Good advice. Let's take our very next house call question.
I'm 65 years old and have bad spinal stenosis, high blood pressure, diabetes, and I weigh too much. I used to have 3 or 4 doctors treating me until I found a family doctor who seemed capable of treating all of my conditions. Can one doctor really treat all of these well, or should I see a specialist for each?
Oh, that's sweet. I think it makes us feel good that you found a good family doctor who can, and you can appreciate the fact that that doctor can take care of more than one thing. I think a good, well-trained doctor that you feel a connection with can take care of all those things really well. But there is an important role for consultation with specialists and sometimes a need to incorporate specialists into your care. For the things that you're talking about, it sounds like that that one doctor's taking care of all your needs.
And these are not easy issues. You said bad spinal stenosis. To me, that means you're in pain a fair amount. You got high blood pressure. Well, that gets you worried. Certainly gets me. Diabetes even more so. And you weigh too much. So we know that there's this kind of combination of things that are going on here. I'd say you're going to be best served by a team approach. The doctor's one part of that team, the primary care doctor, maybe the specialist, maybe the pharmacist, maybe the dietitian, maybe the all kinds of
physical
things.
Physical therapist.
Yep.
So it's not one or the other, but often both or in a combination or at different times of your life. So we wish you all the best and hope that you make progress in those things.
Hopefully it's not like 4 or 5 doctors all working independently. We don't like to see that. Erica, what's our very last house call?
I've had bad shoulder pain for the past 3 months, so severe that I can't sleep at night or play my banjo. When I saw my doctor, he asked if I was doing anything unusual, and the only thing I could think of was having my 3-pound macaw bird perched on my shoulder. He likes it, and frankly, I like him there too. My doctor dropped his pen and said, "Duh, get the bird off your shoulder." I guess he's right, but what do you think?
I think he's right.
I think you have to weigh out the pros and cons. How bad does your shoulder hurt, and how happy does it make you to have your bird standing on it? And if it makes you happy enough and it doesn't hurt you that bad, then I'd say stick with it.
I get a virtual shoulder and and have the bird on that, and hopefully your shoulder can get better. I think that I think your doctor just common sense there. Well, listen, we really appreciate all of you sending in your comments to us today on your health, and we hope that we've addressed issues that are important to you.
We want you to share your questions and stories by emailing us at yourhealth@unc.edu. Visit us online at yourhealthradio.org. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, and get our health app from the App Store.
We'd like to thank the UNC Department of Family Medicine, UNC Healthcare for their sponsorship, and our guest today, Sivan Ya'ari. We hope you'll join us next time on Your Health.
On behalf of Your Health, I'm Dr. Christy Page.
And I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein.
We'll look forward to talking with you again next week. Take care.
The purpose of Your Health Radio is to educate listeners on healthcare issues. Listeners should always discuss their own health or medical concerns with their personal physician or other healthcare provider. Your Health is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
You've been listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by UNC Family Medicine.